Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. As always, we begin with our headlines. So the first headline for today is, Having Their Say, Eye on Education. And there's a photograph in the center, a fairly large photo in the center of the front page of the paper of several, it looks like women, adults, and some kids outside, masks on, with their winter coats on, holding up signs. Unit 4 families on Monday night rallied in support of returning to school in a more extensive manner than the district currently plans. The scene played out at Mellon Building in Champaign before the district's board meeting. That photo is provided to us by Anthony Zillis of the News Gazette, and we'll have more on that story in a little bit. The next headline reads, Coronavirus Response. Vaccinations primed to move into next phase. 75 and up can sign up for wait lists. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. If you're 65 or older with a health condition that leaves you at greater risk for COVID-19, your turn for vaccination is coming up soon in Champaign County. The Champaign-Urbana Public Health District expects to likely finish up vaccinations for adults 75 and older next week, and hopefully also start next week on vaccinations for those 65 and up with underlying health conditions, provided there are enough vaccines available, according to Health District Deputy Administrator Avis Vaide. That's A-W-A-I-S, Vaide, V-A-I-D-E, or excuse me, V-A-I-D. About 2,500 appointments filled up fast for three vaccination days this week for the 75 and up age group. But both Carl and the Public Health District have been keeping a waiting list for those older adults who weren't able to get a vaccine appointment for this week. To add your name to these waiting lists, call the Carl COVID-19 hotline. All right, there's a Carl COVID-19 hotline. And the phone number is 217-902-6100. That's 217-902-6100. To be vaccinated at the former Dress Barn store, which is located at 1901 North Market Street in Champaign. That's the former Dress Barn store at 1901 North Market Street, Champaign. You can also call Public Health at 217-239-7877. That's Public Health at 217-239-7877 for vaccinations at the iHotel, which is located at 1900 South 1st Street in Champaign. That's at the iHotel, 1900 South 1st Street, Champaign. Carl spokeswoman Jamie Mullen said Carl has continued contacting its patients 75 and older who don't use the MyCarl online patient portal to be sure they don't miss the opportunity to be vaccinated. Carl opened dates beyond the initial vaccine clinic this week, given the demand for vaccination, Mullen said. We are currently scheduling patients from the wait list based on anticipated vaccine delivery. Those patients are advised at scheduling that their appointment is based on vaccine availability and may need to be rescheduled. Also being scheduled this week are several hundred people who work in healthcare but have not been vaccinated in the first phase of vaccinations, stage 1A, for such reasons as having been out of town, Vaide said. If vaccinations are going to be opened up for those 65 and older with health conditions next week, announcements will be made soon with information about how to sign up, he said. In terms of priorities for vaccinations, older adults fall into a broad phase 1B group that also includes critical frontline workers in such professions as education, childcare, manufacturing, and transportation, as well as public safety and grocery store workers. How soon vaccinations will be available in this category is being determined by public health agencies in each area, county, depending on their vaccine supplies. Fade said Champaign County's plan for the next 3 weeks will include vaccinations in this order. Finish up adults 75 and older and healthcare workers who missed the first opportunities to be vaccinated. That's the first step. Second step, move on to 65 and older with underlying health conditions. Third, and after that, begin with adults 65 and older without underlying health conditions. After that, educators who do in-person instruction. Here's where vaccinations stand in some other area counties. Vermilion. Vermilion County Health Department Administrator Doug Toole said two clinics this week for remaining healthcare workers who still need to be vaccinated have been rapidly filling up. He's hopeful Vermilion County will be ready to move on to the 1B group next week, though. Toole said it could be a bit later than that. Toole said he didn't know yet if people in critical infrastructure jobs would be separated from adults 65 and up in this group, but he advised Vermilion County residents to keep checking the health department's website and Facebook page for updates. Out of Ford County. Ford County has sent all its available vaccine doses to date to Gibson Area Hospital for its staff and is hoping to finish up Phase 1A in the next 2 or 3 weeks, then move on to 1B, according to Health Department spokeswoman Megan Rutter. By early next week, she said she's hopeful the county will have a sign-up registry available online for vaccinations. Once that happens, she said, it should be clearer to those in the upcoming phase where and when they can be vaccinated. We've had a lot of elderly calling this morning thinking that we're not counting them or that they're being missed, she said. Out of Douglas County. Douglas County Health Department spokeswoman Summer Phillips said Phase 1A healthcare vaccinations are nearly completed, and the rest will likely be completed this week by appointment. The county is now making plans to move on to people in the 1B category and has tentatively scheduled two vaccine clinics for the last week of the month to vaccinate Douglas County older adults and critical workers in this category, pending vaccine availability. They are scheduled as follows. January 27th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Arcola Community Center, located at 107 West Main Street in Arcola. January 28th, from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. at the Tuscola Community Building, that's located at 122 West North Central Avenue in Tuscola. Douglas County residents planning to be vaccinated at these two clinics will need to register for appointments in advance. Registration will open after vaccine supply is confirmed, Phillips said. The health department will share updates with the news media and on its website and Facebook page, she said. And lastly, finally, out of Piatt County. The county public health department said Monday it expects to be able to begin vaccinating people in 1B within 2 weeks. We are accepting names of individuals to be placed on a list now that fall within the next priority. 1B populations to be able to or to be enable or to enable us to have some to enable us to have some idea of numbers. And that's from DeWitt Piatt by County Health Department Administrator David Remmert in an update. The next headline reads, gun violence in Champaign County. A rough year for gunfire deaths in 2020. Increase in shootings, caliber of weapon used. This article is written by Mary Schenk and is based out of Champaign. There were just about twice as many shots fired in Champaign County in 2020 as there were the year before. And the 266 confirmed reports in Champaign, Urbana, and the county represent only those where police can verify that a gun was fired. Of 15 murders in Champaign County during 2020, the instrument of death for 12 of those people was a gun. Two of the other homicides were caused by beatings, and the third from a stabbing. What police are finding is that not only are there more shootings, but there has been a significant increase in the amount of firepower. Consider, for example, a December 4th incident in which two men in a vehicle fired at Champaign County Sheriff's deputies trying to stop their vehicle for speeding. When the car they were in was ultimately stopped, police found an AR-15 assault rifle, two handguns, and a drum magazine that can hold 50 to 100 bullets. Most officers don't even carry 50 bullets on their person, said Champaign Police Sergeant Dave Griffitt, a police officer for 30 years. It's no secret that there are often several casings, and in some shootings, we're starting to see rifle rounds, he said. Griffitt heads up the Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force, a multi-agency body of area detectives who investigate drug offenses, and with drugs and cash, there are usually guns present to keep that stash intact. Griffitt is also assigned by his department to the U.S. Marshals Service Great Lakes Regional Fugitive Task Force, and in that role looks for and arrests men wanted for violent crimes. For the last few years, it's been known there are these high-powered weapons in the community, and many of them are possessed by people not allowed to have them, he said. He believes social media is a factor. A young man displays a certain gun on a video, and someone else wants to mimic that. It's no different than trying to show off who has the most money. People want to show off what they have. It's a sign of strength, he said. Almost weekly, young men charged with illegally possessing guns are asked in court why they have guns. The answer is uniformly that they feel the need to defend themselves. I find it embarrassing, said Griffitt, who said there's a large number of young men involved in gun violence for whom diplomacy is a foreign concept. Nobody fist fights. Nobody sits down and talks through a disagreement or tries to work out a compromise. Communication or a physical encounter is not something they wish to partake in, he theorized. He also doesn't believe it's a gang problem per se, but rather allegiances among friends. They don't have a normal chain of command or a certain code like back in the late 1980s or 1990s with the gangster disciples and vice lords, where orders were given, things were done. That's not what we're talking about. It may be three of your friends from the neighborhood, and you decide to bond together and look out for each other, he said. Often the strife that leads to shootings is for no tangible reason. It's not necessarily about drugs or territory. A lot of it has to do with disagreements or past issues that were never really resolved, he said. Social media, he said, has become a tool to call out others or to quickly alert an ally to the location of a perceived enemy. That's why you have an isolated shooting on a side street, because somebody has shared your location, Griffitt said. As for the pandemic being a reason for the increased killings, Griffitt isn't convinced. I just think the situations presented themselves during a pandemic, he said. Meantime, area police departments are working with groups like the Community Coalition to provide resources to at-risk youth in hopes of reducing the number of gun crimes. The next headline reads, Urbana Police Department, local NAACP, ACLU, critical of use of force proposal. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Urbana. After holding listening sessions last fall, Urbana Police Chief Bryant Serafin introduced a draft of the department's new use of force policy, which he said places a greater emphasis on de-escalation. It would also clarify and expand officers' duty to intercede when they observe unreasonable use of force, Serafin said. As for the de-escalation policy, Serafin said, ours was lacking. Now there's a bullet-pointed list here where we actually go into what are some of those techniques, he said. When officers use force, they would also now be required to notify their supervisors, Serafin said, and it clarifies when such incidents require a field investigation by a supervisor. The proposed changes were prompted by the police killing of George Floyd in Minnesota and the arrest of Alaya Lewis in Urbana last year. But the changes did not please many of the public commenters at Monday's City Council meeting, including the leaders of the Champaign County branches of the ACLU and the NAACP. Overall, this policy fails to accomplish the purpose of protecting the public from excessive use of force or other misconduct by police, nor is it designed to substantially diminish the number of incidents in which force is used, local ACLU President Carol Spindle said on behalf of her organization and the local NAACP. And really, this is a policy for the 20th century, not the 21st. The next headline reads, Coronavirus Pandemic, Day 304, by the numbers. Illinois, there have been 1,033,526 cases. That's up 4,776 cases. There have been 17,627 deaths. That's up by 53. The 7-day positivity rate is at 7.6%, which is down 0.3%. Here are some more numbers out of Champaign County. 14,853 cases. That's up 148. There have been 92 deaths, and we're at a positivity rate of 7.4%, which is down by 0.1%. Out of Douglas County, there have been 2,044 cases. That's up by 15. There have been 34 deaths. And right now, Douglas County has a positivity rate of 11.2%, which is down 0.6%. And out of Fort Piatt, Vermilion, that's all kind of blended together, but it says there's been 6,674 cases. That's up by 91, 81 deaths total, and they're at a positivity rate, of 9.7%, which is down by 2.2%. Illinois impact. Hospitalization is still an issue, but Region 6 positivity rate falls. 243 get first vaccine dose in Champaign County. Region 6's 7-day positivity rate did something Monday it hadn't done in 2021. Drop at 9.4%, down from Sunday's 9.9%. East Central Illinois' rate is tied for third lowest among Illinois' 11 regions after not falling since December 31st. That likely won't be enough for restrictions in place since November 20th to be relaxed. Friday, the first day it can happen. Region 6's bugaboo remains hospitalizations. The state requires declines in 7 of 10 days. Its count has risen in 7 of 10. Down, active cases among inmates at the Danville prison by 35 to 147. Up, the number of Champaign County health care workers and long-term care residents who've received their first vaccine dose by 243 to 6,766. Champaign County's active cases rose by 35 to 856. And in CU, here's a breakdown from the zip code 61821 out of Champaign, 135 cases, that's down by 1. In area zip code, 61802, out of Urbana, there are 114 cases, that's up by 3. From zip code 61820 out of Champaign, there are 111 cases, that's up by 10. From zip code 61822 out of Champaign, cases are at 100, that's up by 15. From zip code 61801 out of Urbana, that's 68 cases, up by 1. An 8th death was reported at the Piatt County Nursing Home, where 43 residents tested positive since December 6. Cases exploded the week before Christmas, Administrator Scott Porter said. And those stats are provided to us by Jeff D'Alessio of the News Gazette. And now, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Its doors closed due to pandemic restrictions. Danville's historic Fisher Theater still is providing community entertainment while raising money to pay bills. Since December, the Fisher has been renting its marquee to share congratulatory messages of all kinds. Anniversaries, birthdays, retirements, Merry Christmas, and just this weekend, birth announcements. And on the picture, there's the Fisher marquee, and on it says, "Congratulations to former News Gazette copy editor and Cubby Conversation creator J.J. Lockwood for becoming a grandparent for the first time." The idea was hatched and carried out by Executive Director Jason Rome and Operations Director Ashton Greer. We've always had people asking us, "Can I rent it?" But most of the time we were marketing something of our own, Greer said. "We saw this as an opportunity because we're not using the marquee because we're not open." Prices range from $100 for a one-day message on one side of the marquee to $500 for a week-long message on both sides. "It's helping pay our electric bill," said Greer, noting other entertainment venues such as Hoopston's Lorraine Theater are doing the same thing during these down times. The marquee, which stands out in a high traffic area on North Vermilion Street, is for rent at least through January. Reach out to Greer at Ashton, that's A-S-H-T-O-N, at Fisher Theater, that's FISCHERTHEATRE.com. Or you can also call the following number, 217-474-2978. 217-474-2978 if interested. The response has been wonderful, Greer said. People call us and tell us, that message made my day. And again, there's a nice picture in the paper of the Fisher Theater marquee. Lots of lights underneath it. And there's letters in black on the whiteboard. It's a pretty theater. And now, history. Area history. In 1921, Newton M. Harris was elected president, of First National Bank of Champaign. It was the 57th annual meeting of the bank, all of which had been under the ownership of the Harris family. B.F. Harris was its president for nearly 40 years. Newton Harris was the third generation of the family to assume its presidency. In 1971, a new Champaign County courthouse and jail facilities were recommended in a public administration survey. In 2006, the expansion of IHSA boys basketball to four classes wouldn't mean the return of the state championships to the Assembly Hall at the University of Illinois, at least not till the tournament came up for bid again. The IHSA board voted to expand boys basketball from two classes to four, beginning with the 2007-2008 school year. Peoria had the contract to host the finals through 2010. In international history, today's highlight. On January 12, 2000, in a 5-4 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court in Illinois versus Wardlow gave police broad authority to stop and question people who run at the side of an officer. Also on this date in 1773, the first public museum in America was organized in Charleston, South Carolina. In 1828, the United States and Mexico signed a treaty of limits defining the boundary between the two countries to be the same as the one established by an 1819 treaty between the U.S. and Spain. In 1910, at a White House dinner hosted by President William Howard Taft, Baroness Rosen, wife of the Russian ambassador, caused a stir by requesting and smoking a cigarette. It was apparently the first time a woman had smoked openly during a public function in the executive mansion. Some of the other women present who had brought their own cigarettes began lighting up in turn. In 1915, the U.S. House of Representatives rejected 204-174 a proposed constitutional amendment to give women nationwide the right to vote. In 1948, the U.S. Supreme Court in Sipule versus Board of Regents of University of Oklahoma unanimously ruled that state law schools could not discriminate against applicants on the basis of race. And in 2006, Mehmet Ali Agca, the Turkish gunman who shot Pope John Paul in 1981, was released from an Istanbul prison after serving more than 25 years in Italy and Turkey for the plot against the pontiff and the slaying of a Turkish journalist. The next headline reads, unrest at U.S. Capitol. Vote your conscience. House speeding to impeach Trump, set to charge him with incitement of insurrection. And that would be the second time that he's been impeached, if that happens. This article is written by Lisa Mascaro, Bill Barrow, and Mary Claire Jalonick. They're all Associated Press writers, and this is based out of Washington. Poised to impeach, the House sped ahead Monday with plans to oust President Donald Trump from office, warning he is a threat to democracy and pushing the vice president and cabinet to act even more quickly in an extraordinary effort to remove Trump in the final days of his presidency. Trump faces a single charge, incitement of insurrection, after the deadly Capitol riot in an impeachment resolution that the House will begin debating Wednesday. At the same time, the FBI warned ominously Monday of potential armed protest in Washington and many states by Trump loyalists ahead of President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration January 20th. In a dark foreshadowing, the Washington Monument was closed to the public amid the threats of disruption. It all added up to stunning final moments for Trump's presidency as Democrats and a growing number of Republicans declare he is unfit for office and could do more damage after inciting a mob that violently ransacked the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government, reads the four-page impeachment bill. He will remain a threat to national security, democracy, and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office, it reads. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is summoning lawmakers back to Washington for votes, and Democrats aren't the only ones who say Trump needs to go. Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania joined GOP Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska over the weekend in calling for Trump to go away as soon as possible, quote unquote. Representative Liz Cheney, a Republican from Wyoming, encouraged House GOP colleagues late Monday to vote your conscience, according to a person granted anonymity to discuss the private call. She has spoken critically of Trump's actions, but has not publicly said how she will vote. Pending impeachment, Democrats called on Vice President Mike Pence and the cabinet to invoke their constitutional authority under the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office before Inauguration Day. Their Democrats' House resolution was blocked by Republicans. However, the full House is to hold a roll call vote on it Tuesday, and it is expected to pass. After that, Pelosi said, Pence will have 24 hours to respond. Next would be the impeachment proceedings. Pence has given no indication he is ready to proceed on a course involving the 25th Amendment. He and Trump met last Monday, or late Monday, for the first time since the Capitol attack, a senior administration official said. Trump and Pence had a good conversation in the Oval Office discussing the week ahead, and they pledged to continue working for the remainder of their terms, said the official, who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss the private meeting. No member of the cabinet has publicly called for Trump to be removed from office through the 25th Amendment. As security tightened, Biden said Monday he was not afraid of taking the oath of office outside, as is traditionally done at the Capitol's West Steps, one of the areas where people stormed the building. As for the rioters, Biden said, it is critically important that there'll be a real serious focus on holding those folks who engaged in sedition and threatening the lives, defacing public property, caused great damage, that they will be held accountable. Biden said he's had conversations with senators ahead of a possible impeachment trial, which some have worried would cloud the opening days of his administration. Senator Democratic leader Chuck Schumer was exploring ways to immediately convene the Senate for the trial as soon as the House acts, though Republican leader Mitch McConnell would need to agree. The president-elect suggested splitting the Senate's time, perhaps go a half day on dealing with impeachment and a half day on getting my people nominated and confirmed in the Senate, as well as moving on the package for more COVID-19 relief. As Congress briefly resumed on Monday, an uneasiness swept government. More lawmakers tested positive for COVID-19 after sheltering during the siege, and new security officials were quickly installed after the Capitol Police Chief and others were ousted in fallout from the attack on the iconic Dome of Democracy. Some GOP lawmakers, including Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, faced public blowback for their efforts on the day of the riot trying to overturn Biden's election. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, a Democrat from Maryland, offered the 25th Amendment resolution during Monday's brief session. It was blocked by Representative Alex Mooney, a Republican from West Virginia, as other GOP lawmakers stood by him. And there's a photo in the paper of National Guard members in the rotunda on Capitol Hill on Monday, nearly a week after a pro-Trump insurrectionist mob breached the security of the nation's capital while Congress voted to certify the 2020 Electoral College results. I'm Susan Muirhead. This has been part one of the News Gazette. Please stay with me, and I'll be back with part two shortly. Thank you, and have a good day.